This is Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG with your host, Linda Small. And I'm a project coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and executive director of Reentry Sisters, a nonprofit that helps women return home from prison. And you can learn more about us at reentrysisters.org. Today, we are talking with Dr. Mara Sanchez, the program director for the Alliance of Higher Education in Prison. So Mara is committed to empowering individuals with lived experience in the carceral system to live and thrive academically and professionally through higher education. So today we're going to talk about how to improve and support the lives of incarcerated people and their families through opportunities for education in Maine's prison system and beyond, and in our communities, right? We want it to lead to success in living wage careers for people with lived experience of incarceration. So we'll begin with an introduction, Mara. So please tell our listeners about your background and what brought you to this social justice work.
Well, thank you, Linda. Thanks for having me. This is fun to have a conversation with you because that's what it feels like, a conversation. So I came to this work through my interest in working with teenagers, actually. So when I was still working in television, my first career field was television. When I was working in television, I was interested in volunteering and staying in some capacity working with teenagers because I thought that I would eventually want to be a teacher. That was always what I thought my career as a mom. I know I wanted to have kids, and I thought my career as a mom is I'd be a teacher. And so I was volunteering. And when we moved to Maine, I'm a trailing spouse, so I followed my husband to Maine. And when we moved to Maine, I was looking around for places to volunteer where I could work with teenagers some more because I was working at Channel 6 at the time. And I couldn't find anything that was interesting to me other than Long Creek Youth Development Center. And so I volunteered to be a mentor at Long Creek Youth Development Center. And this was back in 2008. And I had never been inside of a youth prison before. I had never experienced that, but I knew a little bit about juvenile justice as a field, because when I worked at MSNBC before I moved to Maine, we did a couple of different docuseries. So that was sort of my initial understanding was from these documentaries. So anyway, when I went in and I was volunteering at Long Creek, it really opened my eyes. It really made me look at the world a whole different way. And I said, oh, I don't want to be a teacher anymore. I want to do something about this. That was like, it really shook me to my core. My experience being a mentor was a really good one. I had a mentee. I remember going in that first day and meeting her and seeing her. She was 13 years old. She was a child, you know, and it really impacted me. I felt like there's children in this facility. It didn't feel like the best place for them. I didn't understand it. And so it made me want to go back to school. And so it made me wanted to learn. And that's where it all started. That really is where it all started.
That's an incredible story that experience shook you to your core, seeing kids incarcerated. Yeah. And what do we think we're doing as a society? Locking up our kids, right? Certainly, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah. And I think it was even more poignant because I was pregnant at the time. So when started being a mentor at Long Creek, I was pregnant, and I did that throughout my pregnancy the whole time. I still have the little drawing that my mentee made for my oldest, you know, that's something that I keep. And it just felt like the universe was speaking to me. You know, I'm about to have a child and there are children in there, and I had to do something about it. I wanted to do something about it. So yeah, that started me off, and I went to grad school. I ended up going to grad school and finishing my grad school here in Maine. I actually started in Connecticut, but I finished here in Maine. And because of that, I was able to meet Erica King. And Erica King is somebody who has been a huge mentor in my life and really taught me a lot. I had a lot of, I guess, preconceived notions about what could be done about Long Creek, a lot of naive understandings of how the system would work and that we could just go in and change it all, you know, and Erica was really very patient with me. And she sat me down when we first met, I feel like, or one of the first times we met. She sat me down and explained to me for over an hour about what a wicked problem Long Creek was. And if you take this away, you don't have these other resources for young people. And so how do you do that? And how do you think about the ways in which we can divest from this building and support kids in a better way. So yeah, that was really impactful for me. And then of course there's learning about education and what that set me off on a whole new trajectory. Learning about education and what it does for people who have been incarcerated felt like such an aha moment. And I couldn't believe that like we weren't doing more. Like, oh, look, do you see these outcomes that people have when they are able to have access to education? So I think those were the major touchstones along the way that brought me to where I am now.
Well, it's pretty amazing to think about you starting out at Long Creek in 2008. And here we are on the cusp of 2025. And we're still locking up our kids. There are less of them in there, but that also means we're spending $500,000 per kid. And just imagine what we could do with that money out in the community. It's really shocking and a shame and a shameful process, I think. So as we move into what you're thinking about education, you you're the program manager, right, at the Alliance of Higher Education, which
program
is fabulous. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that organization and what are your plans there?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, I'm programs director. That's my title. I just started, so I feel very new. I feel like I am definitely a new kid on the team, but it's an organization I've known them for a while. The Alliance for Education in Prison is sort of the one big umbrella organization that brings together people who are working in the higher education and prison space. And they have a conference every year. They provide a number of resources. They have reports that they put out, and there's different initiatives and programs that they have pursued over time and are continuing to pursue that are related, sort of incubating new ideas. And it's very, very aligned with the way that I have worked, I feel, and thought about what needs to happen and what should happen with higher education in prison before being in this role. And I still am affiliated with Opportunity Scholars, which started here in Maine. And so for me, Opportunity Scholars just felt like a local arm of the Alliance for Higher Education in Prison in some ways of thinking about education and how do we connect education to meaningful employment and how do we give more people access to education and how do we make sure that, you know, people who are continuing their education outside have the supports that they need and what are the supports that they need and who's paying attention to any of this. So that was the work that I was doing before. And so coming into the Alliance, it feels very aligned. But the Alliance started, I think, in 2017 or 2018, and they started out as people wanted a conference and people wanted to come together and think about and have a community of practice, really. You had all of these disparate prison education programs that started because of the goodwill of funders or schools or in all different kinds of ways. And so this was a way for everybody to come together who was doing this work and share ideas and do all the things that you do at the conference. And it started there and has just grown and continued since then, because it really is the only one organization that's looking at all of it. Yeah. And there's so much diversity in the field of resources, of innovation, of ability to do things. It's so dependent on the prison and the state and the university partner.
Right. We're going to take a break here in a second, but when we come back, we want to dive a little bit into Opportunity Scholars and what that means for you, what that means to the scholars themselves, and how that might be changing the dominant narrative about who justice impacted people are and what we can do about that. So you're listening to Justice Radio with your host, Linda Small, and today we're talking with Dr. Mara Sanchez of the Alliance for Higher Education in Prison and how to improve and support the lives of incarcerated people and their families. So back to you, Mara. Can you tell us a little bit, our listeners, inform them about what was the thought process behind Opportunity Scholars? Who are they and what are they doing?
Yeah, so Opportunity, and I feel like you could answer this question, Linda. And
but
maybe I'll have you answer.
Listener.
But maybe I'll answer part of it. So Opportunity Scholars started at USM, started at the University of Southern Maine, at the Cutler Research Institute. And it started out as an internship program. We, Erica King and I, were doing a lot of work, sitting at a lot of tables, making not making decisions, but some of the tables were making decisions, having a lot of conversations about incarceration in the state of Maine. And we noticed over and over that the people who were sitting at the table were not people who were impacted by incarceration. None of the people that were at those tables had usually ever been incarcerated or even worked inside of the facility. And
That
that felt like a real.
sounds very academic.
Yes. Or it was just very much the way that was at the time. Like, again, this was, 2015, 2016. And so I think things have really changed since then. And we were definitely riding the wave of that change. But we noticed it and we said, this is uncomfortable. We should have people who know what they're talking about. There's people who know what they're talking about in terms of policy and in terms of the law, but not in terms of the actual lived experience. And so we started this. What we conceived to be an internship program. We said, hey, we'll bring in some young people who've been in Long Creek, who've maybe experienced some of this stuff, and we'll pay them for that expertise. And we got so much more than what we bargained for. I mean, it was such a great program because the research that we did in collaboration with these young people, it was so much richer. When we would go and talk to other young people who had been in these systems, they were so much more open to talking to them. They didn't want to talk to me. They looked at me and they said, you don't understand my life, But these were young people who had been homeless. They had been in the foster care system. They had experienced school push out. They had seen mental health crises. So they were really knowledgeable and they were real. And so that was such an eye opener. It now I look back and it's like embarrassing that it was such an eye opener. It's like, duh, of
Duh.
course. But at the time it was just like, wow, this is great. And it was so beautiful to also see those young people who were interns with us. We called it the justice policy interns at the time. They felt comfortable at USM the more time went on. And they started talking about, hey, I want to go back to school. I did some
That's
college
great.
credits in Long Creek. I want to finish my degree. They started talking in that way. And the more they talked about it, the more we looked into what that would mean and then what it meant. And when we found the research on how education can reduce recidivism, how education can increase life incomes, I mean, outcomes, it was so revelatory. It was so amazing. And I felt like it was some secret that people, of course, it's not a secret. The data is very biased that people should have access to education when they're incarcerated. It's better for everybody. That's when it became Opportunity Scholars. That was sort of the real push for us to create a formal program that would support people to continue their education, to think about employment, to make those connections, and for reentry education, which there isn't a lot of support for in the state of Maine, unfortunately.
No, there isn't. Can you, speak a little bit to, your average person on the street who's struggling, who can't afford school, can't afford to send their kids to school? Why should they support, prison education in the state of Maine? Why should prisoners get education when they're not?
Well, I think they should get education too. So I don't think I think it's a false ultimatum to say either or. And happily, in the state of Maine, we are doing free college tuition for the first 2 years now. And we have sort of opened our eyes and seen the light that this is something that we should invest in. And I'd love to see more of that. So yeah, that's not a choice. They should be advocating for their own free education as well. But the reason why we want people in prison to have free education and to be supported to pursue their education is because it is better for you. It's better for society when you have people who are educated coming out who are able to find stable employment, find financial stability. That makes for better neighbors. It makes for better people in the community. It means these people who are coming out and reentering are able to support themselves, support their families, aren't relying so much on public systems, aren't relying so much on taxpayer dollars in order to contribute, and are safer, healthier people and members of our community. And the research, it just doesn't lie. It's very clear on this. And so I guess I have a harder time understanding why we wouldn't want to support it. Why do we want to punish, 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 and make people worse off than when they went in? When people come out of prison and they're worse off, they're more unstable, they're more dangerous. They're more difficult to be neighbors with. They're more difficult to support towards, positive outcomes. So yeah, it's hard for me to see it the other way, but I do understand the sense of, why are we rewarding people who are in prison with this opportunity? And I think it's really about looking at it. It's not pie. Everybody should be able to get education, and everybody is better off when everybody gets education. And people who are especially going into prison with less educational attainment than the general population, something pre-existing went wrong for people that ended up landing them in prison. And so, how do we correct that and mitigate that so that when they come out, they don't go back? That's what frustrates me, is the going back. It's like, I don't want people to go back. I want prison to be rehabilitative. I mean, I'd love for prison to not be what we use, but we're sort of stuck with it. So if we're stuck with prison, can we make it so it's rehabilitative? And so that when people come back, they're truly better off and more able to support other people.
Those pre-existing conditions that you talk about, a lot of them are systemic, like poverty, right? And Maine has the sixth highest racial disparity for incarcerating people, which is horrible since we're like a 98% white state. So discrimination falls under that. Previous trauma, because we're not taking care of our kids, we're not taking care of our communities, we're not taking care of each other. But I'd like to switch into, let's get, you get your education while you're in prison. But here's the rub, right? We still have this dominant narrative about who people who've been incarcerated are, right? They're bad people, they're dangerous people. And how do we create that bridge to housing and to jobs? Because a lot of people come out, they've changed their lives, they changed their perspective, they have a degree, they're turning their lives around, but they can't find a place to live and they can't find a job. What do we do about that?
I think there's so many things I want to say, but I'm going to start with the job piece because I feel like it's really exciting to see what's happening in Maine, where people who are incarcerated, who are working on their degrees, are remote working in limited capacity. Seeing the potential and the promise of that, for me, it feels like the way. I have never seen anything that is so exciting. And it's again another one that's like, oh, duh, of course people inside should take advantage of remote working. Like, now that we know about remote work, especially with COVID and how it really spread the understanding of remote work, of course people who are inside should remote work. But that wasn't a given. And now seeing how it can happen, that people inside can do remote work, they can do remote internships, they can do remote fellowships, they can do things that extend their education, and it sets them up for success in reentry. To me, that's it. That's what we need to be doing. We need to be doing that in so many different ways. It's not just about tied to academics. It's also about people having apprenticeships, people and vocational programming is already pretty robust, but it's just there's so much more possibility and potential. And there's areas that we really need workers in Maine. There's areas that we are hurting for staff and for workers. Sorry, that's my dog. Did that come across?
He wanted to have his comment about the labor. Thank you for your input.
Somebody's walking down my driveway or something. But anyway, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about remote work and expanding that.
The remote work piece is, it feels really like it could potentially be revolutionary in some way that it's giving people the ability to decarcerate themselves and make incarceration into something more rehabilitative. I keep going back to that word, but it's, for me, that needs to be the goal. If we can't quite get to full abolition, then let's get to rehabilitation and healing and using the systems that we have in place to support people towards that. I guess I'm a pragmatist in that way. That's the one thing. It's interesting. I have to mention now that another one of the things that I do for work, my other job, is I'm a lecturer at University of Southern Maine, and I lecture in criminology. And I teach an intro to criminology class. And in this class, I start the year where I have us all get in a circle, and I imagine that we're all stranded on a desert island. And I say, okay, we're all on a desert island. So what do we do about crime? And it's wonderful. And
Lots
so,
of coconuts.
yeah, I mean, and every time I've taught this now, the class in the beginning, they want the treatment for crime, the response to crime, they want to be to send people off the island. If someone commits a crime, then they need to go. They're kicked off the island. And I say to the class, I say, so basically you're advocating for the death penalty because we're in the scenario, we're on a desert island, there's nothing else out there. So when you send people off the island, you're sending them off to die. And when they start the class, they're very like, yeah, death penalty. That's, you know, because the mindset is so carceral. The mindset is so punish, and we exclude people when they do something wrong. And of course, you know, we go through this class and we learn about theory and we learn about restorative justice and we learn about all kinds of interesting concepts and we talk about it all. And then at the end of class, we go back to the desert island and I say, okay, so what are we doing now? And it's very interesting that they have many more ideas and they're also tied to each other. And they recognize that all of us in that class, we're a member of a community and we're important and we have skills, we're assets to the community now. We know each other now. We've been in this for 15 weeks, right? And so when I come to them, I say, I've committed a pretty serious crime. I've committed murder. That's what happens with me on this island. I commit murder. And they look at me and they say, well, you're a valuable member of this community. And so we're going to need to figure out a way to keep you here. But of course, there needs to be accountability. And so we really go through, what does that look like? How do I have accountability for the fact that I, Professor Mara, have committed murder, but I am also the primary baker on this island. So everybody eats a beautiful, wonderful, tasty bread, you know? And so we have this experience. But it's an interesting exercise, but it's one that I think is very telling because when you really get to that level and you think about what do you want for your community? What do you want for your neighbors? It's a lot harder to just throw people away. When you think about the people that you know and you love in your life and you think about any of them committing any kind, even those most serious crimes, even if it's an accident or whatever, when you think about that, you want to figure out a way to make it okay. So why can't we extend that to the rest of our human beings, right? And so that's the challenge of doing that. And I think, you know, it's hard for us culturally to get there, but I think the more that we do these humanizing things, like allowing people to remote work and expanding access to education and going inside our prison, visiting people, the more we will understand that this is our community and we can't throw people away.
I love the idea that, you know, once the kids got to know each other, there was a whole different perspective. And so, Mara, you know a lot of justice impacted people. What do you want our listeners to know about the people that you interact with who have been incarcerated and are currently incarcerated?
What I want them to know? Oh, gosh, that's such a hard question. I do have a lot of people that I consider to be dear friends and colleagues that are justice impacted that are trapped, you know, in our prisons right now. And that's hard. But then I have a whole other part of my life where I interact with so many people who have never interacted with a justice impacted person. And the questions they bring me are the worst. They're the worst. You know, they always want to know, what did people do? Why are they, you know, and they have such a black and white view of people. And so I just want people to stop thinking that way. You know, I want people to know that everybody is complicated. It's such a dumb thing to say, though. It's like, I really don't waste my breath. I oftentimes just wait for people to come to me and ask the questions that I answer. I find that proselytizing to people is rarely very effective. But what I would love people to know is that people everywhere are complicated. There's no gods and monsters. And so we create this image of the incarcerated person as inherently a certain way, whether that be dangerous or mentally ill, or, and the truth is, we're all dangerous and mentally ill, all everything about us, you know, and that's sort of a hard truth that we come to in our criminology class, is that it turns out prison isn't doing anything for our safety out here in the community. It's not doing one thing, and the data shows it. You know, it's not deterrent, it's not working. It's just all that we have. And so we cling to it like a baby with their blanket. But I, you know, would love for people to imagine, what if we couldn't have prison? Because we're in a desert island and we just don't have one. So what do we do? And I love the thought that there was a time before prison and there are some ways in which that we handled, you know, crime and harm, or what we would call crime now, what we might have called harm back then. There are ways in which we handled that were very different than how we do now, for good and for bad. And so are any of those worth resuscitating? And I think the answer is yes. You know, I think the answer is yes. So that's sort of a long answer to your question.
No, that was beautiful, Mara. Thank you. And so we're closing in towards the end of our show. We have a couple minutes left. And I want to know, leave it open for you. Is there anything we didn't cover today that you would like our audience to know about you, your work, justice impacted people, the system?
Well, I think what we didn't cover is I didn't get to ask you nearly enough questions, which I really wanted to do. So I would love to hear from you because you have been an opportunity scholars and you have gotten your education while incarcerated and you have successfully continued your education on the outside. I'm really interested in like what excites you? What do you see as innovative? Like what is something that you're like, this is the future of this work?
Good question, Mara. In terms of education, I'm really interested in mitigating the dropout rate. So if you start your prison education while you're incarcerated, because there's so much pressure for housing and jobs and family reunification, it's the first thing to go because it's the easiest thing to drop out of your life. And that's why there's around a 90% dropout rate in college during transition. And I would like to change that through support systems, through a scholar's home, through anything that we can do to support people to continue their education. And I think that's just a critical piece of resolving the whole issue in terms of how people see justice impacted people, how they see themselves, how they can become more productive, how they can provide for themselves and their family. I think education is pretty much a linchpin for all of those types of things. And so that's kind of where my heart lies, is making sure people complete what they started. And I think that's so critically important. And I would also like people to know that, you know what, just give folks a break. If you see somebody has lived experience, don't throw that application away, whether
Yeah.
you're a landlord, right, or an employer, don't do it. We've all made mistakes, and there are a lot of people walking around that have done a heinous crime who have never spent a day in prison. I think one of them's wanting to run in our country right now, but anyway.
It's true.
That's my soapbox. So thank you so much, Mara. I believe our listeners learned a great deal about justice impacted folk and why they should support education and people personally and in career goals. It's been a fabulous interview and a chat with you. Thank you so much. And listeners, we have some exciting new shows coming up for Justice Radio, exploring criminal legal issues and processes in Maine, like what's it like to be arrested or arraigned or go through the court system, and what does it mean to have a plea bargain or go to trial? So visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series. Thank you.